Good morning.
It's good to see you all here. As Ralph mentioned, we do have several folks traveling, so I'm particularly glad that you're here on this holiday weekend for part three of my series, the final part, as a matter of fact. So I hope it was worth it. My message today is entitled Poverty, Charity, and Justice, Part 3. So, for the past few Sundays, we've been talking about the cyclical nature of poverty, about how the system is not only designed to get the results of more and more people slipping into poverty, but also how it's designed to keep them there. We've considered the necessity of charity, of showing universal love to folks through it. And we've also heard the prophetic words of Dr. King saying, true compassion is more than just flipping a coin to a beggar. It comes to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. And I've added to that point saying charity is love in the moment and justice is love extended into the future. Most spiritual folks do a fairly good job at plugging into various forms of charity. However, it seems that taking part in justice efforts is a little more difficult for us to do. Now, maybe that's because we understand how to go about doing charity a little bit better than we understand about how to go about doing justice. Or maybe it's just that we have far more examples of how to do charity than justice. It could even be that charity is just simply easier to do than justice. Ultimately, though, I can't help but wonder if on some subconscious level we prefer the self-serving feelings of charity to the self-sacrificing realities of justice. The reality is that while charity frequently comes easy for us, justice is difficult to do. As a matter of fact, as a whole, the church is much more comfortable with charity than with justice. Now, personally, I see a general malaise that's falling across Christianity. We have bought so far into the kumbaya, turn the other cheek, Jesus is more of a doormat than a door theology, that we have rendered ourselves somewhat ineffectual at times. And as I mentioned before, frequently we've come to think that loving our neighbor as ourselves means not making anyone upset by demanding that the poor and the sick be cared for, even though that's exactly what Jesus did. Or worse yet, we've started measuring our success at being that kind of Christian by how many people like us compared to how many people don't. Need I remind us all that enough people didn't like Jesus that they nailed him to a tree? Not because he was a bad person, but because he did not make nice when people were taking advantage of those who were already marginalized, particularly the poor. He was busy being an advocate, demanding justice. He didn't turn the other cheek when politicians and religious leaders conspired to step on the least of these. He stood up for what was right. He flipped tables when it was necessary. He did not lash out violently at another human being, ever. But he did lovingly confront them. He was always motivated by love. But he did not back down. He did not sacrifice our call to let justice roll like mighty waters. He did not sacrifice that call for the comfort of humanity. He did not keep his mouth shut in the name of being nice. He did not do those things because he loved the world too much. He wanted to love his neighbors as himself. He wanted to be busy practicing advocacy. As we talked about during Holy Week and Easter, not only did he confront systems of injustice, but he tried to teach us to do the same. He did it standing in the tradition of great prophets of Judaism who never failed to stand up and against the abuse of power. They risked everything, and they frequently were run out of town or put to death for it. Maybe that's what we're afraid of, the proverbial crosses that we'll have to bear. I'm really not sure. I certainly don't think it's because we'd rather see the least of these carry the overwhelming burdens of a society structured to benefit the wealthy than to be thought of as anything less than nice. The love of God, the love universal, has claimed the meek and the poor in spirit and those who mourn and those who thirst for justice, and the merciful, and the pure of heart, and the peacemakers, and those who suffer persecution for the sake of justice. People who take advantage of the poor and persecute people who work for justice have been given a pass by far too many Christians who think that turning the other cheek means to sit passively by like a doormat as the marginalized get stepped on, used, and abused by the powerful who wipe their feet on the world, sometimes of the world, sometimes gritty reality, so that the houses that they build on the backs of the rest of us don't get soiled with the pain and the abuse and the hatred of the world that they themselves helped create. Justice looks like words of love put into action. Justice looks like activism. Justice requires you to not make nice with abusive systems. It requires you to rock the boat and take a stand on issues that are frequently hot-button political issues. Maybe we just haven't thought it through enough. Maybe we just need new leaders to stand up and say, philanthropy is commendable, but it must not cause the philanthropist to overlook the circumstances of economic injustice which make philanthropy necessary, and do so with the passion of the prophetic voice that Dr. King once did. Then again, as I once discussed with progressive Christian author Diana Butler Bass, who, by the way, will be speaking here on June the 23rd at the installation service at what time? 2:00. 2:00. Yes. No selfish plug there. As I once discussed with Diana, maybe all of us are the new prophetic leaders. It is time for us to reclaim the place of prophetic voice in the midst of our struggling society. As the wealthiest of folks step on and abuse the poorest in our nation by co-opting our government, supposedly for, of, and by the people, as the wealthiest of folks step on and abuse the poorest of our nation by co-opting our government through the voice and influence of the almighty dollar, we must proclaim and reclaim our prophetic voice. We must not stop doing the necessary work of charity. But we must also not stop there. We must push on, risking ourselves, risking ridicule, risking our places of privilege, and reclaim the prophetic voice of justice. Because you see, charity and justice, they are a matched set. And it's time to let justice roll. Now, the question is, how do we go about doing that? Well, as we touched on briefly last week, here's my starter list. One, begin by listening to those who have been marginalized. Two, find out about the ways the system creates obstacles rather than pathways to getting out of poverty. Three, find other resources to educate yourselves about the issues with the system. And this includes connecting with groups that are already working on these very issues. Four, decide which issues that you feel most passionate about, because there are too many of them to take them all on by yourself. And you are going to need that passion, because systems tend to resist change. Five, consider your particular set of skills and where you might leverage them and your place of privilege to go about changing those systems. And finally, six, and this is the most difficult and most important step. We become persistent advocates. Persistent advocates. If we wish to love our neighbors as ourselves, to walk alongside them, to advocate in the name of love, there are certain things that should move us to the point of wanting to flip tables as well. People using God's name for false purposes. People using religion to further marginalize the least of these. God's justice not rolling like mighty waters. Philanthropy stopping at charity rather than living into the future through justice. Those are the things that we should be willing to flip tables for. When those things happen, it's time not only for us to flip tables, but to turn them. It's time for us to live into being the advocates we are called to be. It's time for us to no longer stop at charity, but rather to extend our love of neighbor into justice. It's time for us to confront injustice at every turn. Dr. King once famously said, "The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice." I say, the moral arc of the universe may very well bend towards justice, but it does not bend unassisted. And I'd like to remind us all that the squeaky wheel gets the oil. You see, as Dr. King once said, freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. I've given you a list of some of the steps I believe help us decide what to do about doing justice. But what are the tools for demanding freedom for the oppressed? Well, here's a few. One, educate people about poverty and how the system's rigged against the poor. Two, hold or attend rallies about the issues of poverty. This both raises public awareness and shows the powers that be that we will not allow them to go unchecked. Three, write editorials to local news outlets about the issue. And four, contact and encourage elected officials to work against poverty and to change systems that enable and create poverty. Now, those are some of the more obvious ways to get involved, and they are necessary, and they are effective. But sometimes the most effective, impactful ways are the creative ones. For example, do some reversed panhandling and give out quarters to people along with a handout about poverty and ask them to call their representatives about helping with this issue. And whatever creative thing you do, make sure it is a change that you are passionate about. Then think about your skills and apply them creatively. Whether you are the oppressed seeking justice or the privileged trying to follow the teachings of so many great spiritual leaders, we must remind ourselves that we are to be justice walking, persistently demanding equality and justice in the face of indifference, indecision, and indiscretion. We are to be the squeaky wheels of justice, calling attention to every misstep, mistreatment, and misuse of power by those who would oppress others. That kind of justice takes time. It always has. And because it takes time, it requires a willingness to be a persistent advocate. At times, it requires being an annoying advocate, an insistent advocate, a stubborn, tenacious, unrelenting, steadfast advocate. Thorns in the side of injustice. In short, if we wish to be good advocates, we must be what I call the squeaky wheels of justice. We are the justice makers. We are the benders of the moral arc of the universe. The persistence of our faith in matters of equality, freedom, and justice matter because they are the weight, they are the momentum, they are the actions which continue to move creation further down the arc of justice towards a world that more closely mirrors what God desires for it. We are to be the squeaky wheels of justice for a world sorely in need of the kind of love which creates equality, freedom, and justice for all. This is your chance to respond to the theme of today's message or the message itself. I just would remind you, if you'll kind of rehearse what you're going to say and keep it as concise as possible so that others have the opportunity as well. Are there those who have anything they'd like to add? Thank you. I appreciate that, Vance. Are there others? David over here. And then we'll come back over here.
All right, I second the motion. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Dave.
And I'm reminded of something my father used to say. He was trained as an engineer. He would say, I can only deal with problems I can get a hold of. So guidance on problems we can get a hold of.
There you go.
And also, when Jesus was calling out the money changers, he was saying, this is the practice that everybody's doing, but it's leading to oppression. So
exactly.
Guidance on what things that are just ordinary, taken for granted, that are not
exactly
nice, would be appreciated.
Exactly. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. Back over here.
When I first started to come here, Jim Dollar is the minister, and that was more kind of a shaking the tree of Christianity. The certainly message is I'd never heard before. I also knew there was a different group here that was more kind of like Zoha or social justice. Seemed like with messages like this, you'd be able to combine the two. No longer two congregations, but one.
I appreciate that. And I certainly hope that we all feel that way, too, that we're part of each other for sure. We have different spiritual needs, but we're part of each other. Are there others? Yeah, right here.
Well, I think a lot of this goes back to if we could just get people in Congress who aren't paid by big interests, and instead we take back our Congress and own them ourselves, instead of allowing big money to give them money, you know, have limits on what they can receive from these people. And then they will vote good laws in. We haven't had a good law passed in the United States in 20 years. Look at that one about phones. People calling you on the phones all the time.
Right.
They watered it down so bad it was useless. You have to call this number and put yourself on a list and all this stuff. We couldn't get something even simple like that done.
Yeah.
You know?
I certainly believe that money clearly is one of the things that has caused this issue, where people are bought and they are only interested in the dollars and not in the people. Are there others? We got you jumping from one side to the other. You're not going to have to go for a walk or anything today. You're going to get it all in here.
My name is Lena. I just have a couple of statements. It's really hit me. Okay.
No, that's okay.
I think the greatest injustice is the notion that we're separate.
Absolutely.
Number two, the system that we need to address is the patriarchy.
Certainly.
That's it.
Certainly. Couldn't disagree with either one of those statements at all. You're right. I'm with you. Right on the money. Are there any others? If not, then Ralph, I'm going to turn it back over to you.